podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
All right, who's doing the hosting? Is it me or you?
We should have decided that before coming on, shouldn't we?
We're meant to sort out this before Very... show. We've been stuck out in backstage.
So professional.
I know, yeah. I'll jump even enough. Welcome out to the forum. We have missed a couple of weeks. You can see I've been a bit busy. And the rest of the lads have been just cheering on the sidelines. That's basically what it is. We've been all cheering along as it came out.
Not at the conception stage.
No, definitely not the conception stage. So there he is there. Tonight on the show, you can see below me, you have Ray Brady in a range of merchandise for Stranger Things and Liverpool Football Club. Beside him is Ray Dicko, just to make it a bit more confusing because there's two Rays in the show and they're both beside it. Beside him, there is Andy Young. How are you, Andy? And you see you've moved around again. Have you moved around again in the house?
Yeah, just to feel a lot more comfortable facing West.
Yeah. Is that French right?
Sorry, it's not. My house is southwest facing, so I'm actually facing.
As long as there's a south in it, you're all right. Yeah.
Andy, you continue on that line of thought. I'm just going to drop this baby into his mother, so I don't get into too much trouble. So I'll be back in a minute. Okay?
I'm facing my gaff is facing southwest, so I don't know what I'm facing. A nicer way, I prefer this way.
Seen a few comments in there about us playing the kids tomorrow night. I think Phil would have put the baby forward. He's got that lesser interest in the League Cup and all the other cups.
I like seeing Pep on the Carling Cup duty steals.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
What you thought he meant? The other Pep.
I thought there was some. Sorry, I didn't hear.
Stop on the echoes. That might have been
going off then. About non-City fans not showing up or some shit. Yeah.
All right, Grant. Well, before we preempt the agenda for tonight's show, just let me fix my hair. There we go. Normally we get all this thing sorted out well before, but Gav wouldn't let us in to play. We're all sort of just hanging around. Going, what's the story? Keeping well. On tonight's show, we're going to do four topics. As you know, that's the idea of the show. We're going to have a look at true form. We're going to have a look at the cracks in City's mentality. We're going to have a talk about boss nights and LFC tribalism. And Ray Brady,
especially for you.
I've no idea what your topic was. All I heard was who can play the biggest flute in the Premiership. I don't think that's really your topic, but so
when we come on, sounds all right. We go with that.
Okay, we'll keep your topic to the end in case we come up with something better as we go along, right? in terms of what's there, particularly with Norwich there. Right, so there's Anthony O'Shill says, going to not watch tonight's show, I cannot stand that Gibbon, Anthony. it's John Gibbons. He's on the Anfield Rap. That's
what's
Andy
a Gibbon?
Young. What?
What's a Gibbon?
It's a monkey.
It's a monkey.
That's racist.
Very long arms, Andy.
But there it is. Anyway,
do you know what? It probably goes back to a couple of shows ago when I called all the FSG out with some lads looking for loads of signings, all entitled, and and they were very bold and everything else. So everyone hates me. That happened at the start of last season as well, and I grew on everyone again. So it was grand.
Well, if we win the league, everyone will love you, Andy. And if we don't, everyone will think that you're just a horrible top red. So it's just the way it is, right?
I'm telling people for years now that we're really, really good, and then nobody believes me.
No.
And then when we do win the league, nobody says, Andy, look, you know, you were right all along. We are really, really good.
Dan Bailey wants to know how Torquay was, Razor. He must be following on Instagram. So
yeah, it was super, as always. Yeah, that's my home from home. It's my equivalent of Cartown that the Dubs usually traipse after I go to Torquay every year. Yeah.
I enjoyed all your pictures and social media.
Did you?
Videos.
Take that with a pinch of salt, Phil.
In the water.
Anto's only joking. We can relax. Anto's in for the night. Yay!
That's not a given.
That's and that's not Anto. That's Antio. That's his Italian cousin. Antio Chia.
Yeah,
exactly. Right, so look, lads, the first thing up to it'll be my topic, and I just want to bring it up, and it's the concept of true form. Football is seen in the immediacy, it's seen in the micro, and very rarely do fans step back and look at what the bigger picture is, okay? And on that basis, what is the true form? We look at Liverpool, we look at United, we look at who else is there? Chelsea, who are at the top of the table. People are losing their shit over the fact that people are saying that Chelsea are probably favourites for the title and the best team in the league and blah, 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 blah. And then you have all the lads saying that we're actually the best as well. And the results are the same, blah, 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 blah. And then you have all the lads who are dying for United to win the league because Ronaldo's there saying that Ronaldo is the best in the league and Ronaldo's the best team in the league. And then you've got like the other people who are sort of saying, well, City are making the same amount of chances as Liverpool. Just strange that they aren't getting the same results. So true form, I think, is something that should be really considered when we're looking at players taking a moment. Let's see if you want to talk.
I've already been to Torquay for fuck's sake.
Yeah, no. Did you
take it off when you went over this time?
Yeah.
What?
Did I really took it back off you?
Yeah.
You must have owed a few, Bob.
It was a strong breeze. That was what Andy. It was windy over there. It was like a dandelion effect.
He wants to grow one of the Brendan O'Carroll ponytail things at the back. That's why he had to take it from the front and start transplanting onto the back. Isn't that what
give extensions? No, well, yeah. Listen, I have a pure bleeding Kojak job. I need to fucking trade a bastard. So part one is done. I'll go back again to get a bit more done. And you know, it's the equivalent of if it went for a build job, just getting the right tit done and leaving the left. That's basically what I've got
to. Shawnee Lawson speaking the truth.
Yeah, Mo Salah is the best player in the world. Shawnee, you know I told you 2 years ago that Mo Salah is better than Messi.
At least 2 years ago.
I haven't been sleeping much. Mo Salah is the best in the world and was better than Messi and Ronaldo even 2 years ago. It's just that people are just catching up now because this is 2021 and next year will be 2022. So look, I want to go back to the idea of true form. What is true form? What does it look like? If you take Liverpool's run of form, what since February is it? They've won more points per game. They've won more points than everybody else. And I think second in that form table is United.
Yeah.
And then comes City, even though they won the league. And then comes Chelsea behind them as well. So lads, in reality, like these are the four teams that we're talking about that we expect to be in the top four this season. These are the four teams that are pulling away from everyone in the league. But this early into a season, it's near impossible to establish real true form and who the real runners and riders are, unless somebody starts running away with it like we did in 2019. Ray, ready?
Yes, I think that's fair enough. I don't know. Look, I think it's easy to get led sometimes by narratives and media online and stuff. Just you can only go from the games you've watched so far. I still don't know where I am at with this Liverpool team. I'm still, you know, happy where they are, no doubt. But I don't know if I'm as confident as the rest of you are with them. I don't know. I don't know where I'm at with it, and I don't know who I'd be tipping. And you know, sorry to follow the pack, but I've been impressed with Chelsea when I've seen them, and they look rock solid as well. So I'd probably go with Chelsea. It'd be as you say, current form, so to speak, and looking in the here and now. But with the record you've just talked about with Liverpool, I would be surprised at that. I didn't know that. I don't know where you pulled that stat from, but I'm surprised at it.
So would you be even surprised to know that Liverpool and Chelsea's results are identical this season? Identical. Scores everything.
Okay. I wouldn't. I don't know if I'm surprised or not. What I'm talking about here is just you're looking at teams and you're sort of getting a vibe when you watch teams. That's basically what you're judging off. And me looking at Chelsea. Well, I don't know. What do you want to say? A feeling, you know, because you can have two fellas sitting beside each other watching a team and they'll have two totally different takes.
I've been impressed
with Chelsea when I've seen them. And at the minute, they look the strongest team at the minute.
Right, Ray Dicko. Ray Brady's gone mad there. I think it's the Stranger Things t-shirt he has on him. For you, when you look at the form, do you care? By the way, do you care at this point of the season, 5 games in, where people are in the league table and what it looks like? Or do you have a longer view in terms of what these teams are actually doing?
I think you always want to get off to a good start. The one thing I don't really take into account is what happened last season. So, you know, bring the unbeaten run from last season into this season is a bit irrelevant to me. So I get where you're coming from, though, Phil. I think because we had the season last, you know, just gone with no fans, and, you know, it's the return of fans. It's kind of the return of football, return of normality. I've actually spent quite a bit of time back in Liverpool recently, and, you know, I think it just feeds into the whole narrative of society getting back to normal. And I think there's a lot of hype at the moment about, you know, the Premier League, obviously the big transfers. You know, there were some splash signings, you know, Lukaku coming to Chelsea, Ronaldo, you know, really topped everything, really. That's, I hate to say it, but it really has topped everything that's happened in the last few seasons. And, you know, you watch Match of the Day and just get a sense that the really everything's getting sort of hyped up, you know what I mean? And every kind of result, every performance, everything's getting overanalyzed, you know, almost in game. I mean, I watched that Newcastle Leeds game on Friday night, and honestly, you would think like that, you know, relegation was around the corner for Newcastle when Leeds went 1-0 up. It was just all a little bit mad. It's just the intensity around at the moment is probably like something we haven't seen for years and years. Back on us and our form, how we've started. I mean, I'm happy, but I sense a bit like Ray that, you know, we shouldn't get too carried away with the fact that we've got, you know, the points on the board, the wins and the draw. I'm actually still really pissed off over the fact that we didn't take advantage of that situation against Chelsea. You know, them down to 10 men, and as good a defensive performance as they put in, I think that was a wasted opportunity. And I just noticed today as well, I didn't even realize this, but apparently, not that it ever comes to these things, but you never know. This can go head to head this season. I didn't realize that was a tiebreaker, and it wasn't goal difference, but I read somewhere that it was down to head to head. And obviously if we're in a title race with Chelsea, which I firmly believe we will be, then who knows what that wasted opportunity actually ends up at the end of the season becoming.
We have a super chat there from Kill_the_Kardashians, who paid Zara 35s, which is a massive amount in Zara's.
€2.
Anyone else? I've got Zara 35. Thanks.
South African rands, I think it is.
Yeah, it is. It's a solid €2.
Solid €2 into the key. So, anybody else sick of the media and pundits putting Ronaldo on a pedestal, completely ignoring his diving, whining, and rebounded goals, or is it just me? Andy, that's a question I'm going to ask you there.
Doesn't help Phil that he scored in every fucking game, does it? You know what I mean?
But Ray, that goes back to the Mo Salah piece. Imagine how wrecked everyone is, given he's a one season wonder into his fifth season and he scores every single game. Like, yeah. Look, again, just there, knows what to do, drills it, bang. AC Milan misses a penalty, doesn't make a blind bit of difference, will score anyway. Like, do you know what I mean? He is as good. He's actually better than Ronaldo at the moment because he does more. He creates more. he causes more things, and he's actually got a better figure done as well. We saw a graphic today that showed that these muscles that run down the side are more defined than Cristiano Ronaldo's now when he whips off his jersey. And United fans were going mad saying that actually Cristiano Ronaldo's are more defined than Mo Salah. So this is going to be the narrative all season. Who has the best body between Salah and Ronaldo?
Would you say they both shave their chest or use Imac?
No, I don't think
because Mo had a Persian rug there a few years back. Now it's he's wanting everyone to see that fucking 94 pack he has.
Yeah, I don't think for a start Ronaldo has actual hair. I think he's got like, do you remember? he's got Lego hair. He just takes it off. He was all his hair.
Yeah, remember his statue. Remember they made the statue of him. Oh my god, it looked like they put him in front of a fire and just let him melt. Then went, have you got the statue? Bollocks, I left it in front of the fire.
Quick, it was like if you got an Aero bar, right? And you stripped away the layers of chocolate to turn it into a Ronaldo statue. And that's exactly
needs
what
to get more air in, actually. I forgot all about that. I need to start fucking that picture up on Twitter a whole lot now every time they talk about that fucker scoring goals.
But yeah, so I think like Andy, for you, like with Ronaldo and Salah and the whole lot, is it down to chest hair now at this point? Who has the best?
At the time, is that the tiebreaker? Is it
level on points? Whip off the jersey, wet t-shirt competition between the two lads.
I think the question goes back to the 35 czar on their Kardashian. Like the media. The media.
It's a new character.
The 35 czar Kardashian. It is a bit mad how much media attention Ronaldo gets. Like, look, essentially now he's just become this kind of poacher. You know, and he's brilliant at it. Let's make no mistake. But you look at what Salah does for Liverpool in every department, his passing, his tracking back. You know, Klopp talked about that triangle that they started this season with Trent, Elliott and Salah. And then Henderson got involved and Elliott's injured. And the amount of times he kind of bails Trent out. Like, you know, when I say bails out, look, I mean, that's the system. Trent is allowed to do that. Trent is allowed to get to the boy line and get involved and get shots on target or try and set up goals. But Salah's there. I mean, he's so much better player, yet the media don't seem to recognise it. And I mean, it always seems to be a way with our players is the media are slow to give Liverpool credit. I mean, talk about Liverpool being title challengers and everything gets taken away because of the likelihood that we might experience injuries like other teams can't have injuries as well. Now, it's extraordinary. But anyway, it doesn't boil down to chest hair. It boils down to Salah being twice the player that Ronaldo is these days. It boils down, somebody tweeted an article earlier about has Salah now become number three in the world ahead of Neymar? How ridiculous is that? He's been way ahead of Neymar for years. With what's going on with Messi now, it doesn't seem to have been the greatest start in the world at PSG. He's already fallen out with the manager. Salah's the best player in the world. You know what I mean? And it's time people recognise that the best player in the world is playing in the Premier League. And he won't always be in the Premier League. The Premier League themselves and the pundits.
In the Super League with us.
They should actually be proud of that fact because he's been at Liverpool now for nearly 5 years. This is his fifth season, and every season he's performed unbelievably at high levels. And this is a fella who doesn't play centre forward. Ronaldo's going to get bags of goals, but he's just standing up front. You know what I mean?
This is the thing. Ronaldo is now a centre forward. He used to be a wide forward or a wing forward until he went to Real Madrid. Then he became this centre forward that played alongside Benzema. People used to think that he wasn't playing off the wing. He was just playing, roaming in around Benzema and picking up pieces and taking free kicks and hitting the ball out of the Bernabeu, right? Yeah. Now you look at it and you look at Salah. He's still playing off the wing. His goal return as a wide forward or as a winger is never been seen before. Right. Even Messi plays as a 10. When Messi wasn't scoring the goals he scored until Pep moved him in to that sort of inside forward channel and where he could just go and roam and pick up the ball and go from what he wants. You look at Salah and he is attacking off that right flank. Him and Trent are underlap lapping, overlapping, undy lapping, twisty lapping, all the lappings you can do, the boys are doing it.
Pretend he lapping.
He just has that knack of picking up the right place at the right time, being in the box, following the ball or knowing where the ball is going to break and scoring the goals. And I couldn't give a flying shite what Ronaldo does or what Lukaku does. They don't even have a centre forward at City anymore because Pep has revolutionised the game, and he's actually shown a new way of doing things. He's now not winning games to win games. It's amazing what he's doing, right? And I keep thinking to myself, when I look at true form, I look at, okay, so who are my players that are on form, and who are the players that are going to have dips across the course of the season and can be covered by the other guys that are there? So we've looked at Mane, and it seems to me that Mane isn't the player he was 3 years ago, which is normal. He's getting older. That's just, he doesn't seem to have that incredible burst of acceleration he has over 2 years. He still has a very high top end speed, but he just doesn't, that he used to have this burst of acceleration that took him away from players. Now it's a lot more, it seems to be a lot more in his brain in terms of having to beat players and do things. You look at Jota, right? We're missing Firmino. And that's not that. I've said here, I've expected more out of Firmino, but he is missing. He is out, right? Then you look at United and you say, right, they have what? Mount Rushmore, Mounty, and you know, you've got your man, the Marshall, who may as well be Marshall Bravestar, the fella couldn't kick snow off a barn. And then they've got Ronaldo. They signed Ronaldo because they needed a number nine. If he can't play.
Yeah, but you know what gets ignored? They've signed Ronaldo. They signed Sancho, who, like a couple of years ago, when he was being linked to United, was probably the most sought-after player at the time in terms of availability. Mm-hmm. United failed to sign him. Now they've actually signed him, right? And why are people ignoring? I guarantee if he was playing for Liverpool, the media would be coming down.
On saying why Liverpool. So I have to say, right, the reality is, and I think it's only because his mates work in the press and a large amount of the press. If anybody else was there as the United manager and they were still getting the results they're getting, like they went to play the young lads in Bern, wherever it is, right? And they were beaten by them lads last week, which is outrageous when you think about it. Some Austrian team made up of butchers and candlestick makers and the lads and the Mercedes, right? And like they basically went and lost there, and they still had a more or less forced 11 that was sitting out that could play in the Premier League for them. And I go back to it, and I just think, that's just because they're piss poorly managed. And long may Solskjaer stay at United, as far as I'm concerned. He'll probably keep them in the top four because they have the most expensive squad in the league. They've spent more money than anybody else in the league. And that's what it is. They've wasted so much money. Look at their centre backs and look at their centre midfield, right? They have about 9 show ponies, no engines, lots of money spent on fellas up the top end of the pitch, and then two lads that were in Lord of the Rings and the Fellowship of the Rings. They were standing there as the boat came down the river, just massive statues that would just fall over and hit into each other. They're awful. And then they have a fella who is really, who's like an average version of Kloyan at right back, and they have the Hamburglar at left back. So like you know, in reality, like I think United are probably outperforming what the sum total of their parts are, and that's unlikely to continue over the course of the season. So when we talked about Chelsea, I think Chelsea have true form. I think City have false form. I think City will do a City and win 100 matches in a row out of 7 games, and suddenly we level on points with us all. We're like, how did that happen?
It's not going to take a lot. I mean, they're only a few points off the pace. It's
two or 3 points, unless you're seven or 8 points behind. Two or 3 points. As we know ourselves, we were 10 points off in March, and we still managed to finish third in the league, right?
The only thing, we'll talk about City in a while, but you know what I mean? There's trouble there.
There's something else going on behind the scenes. Definitely in City as opposed to something else. So, like, I think, lads, that long may Neville push the narrative that something's not right and we're not as good as we were 2 years ago. Because as long as he pushes that and we keep doing what we're doing at the moment, he's right. We're not as good as we were 2 years ago. We're fucking better.
He's doing us a favour, to be fair.
Yeah.
I was going to say, as a sense this weekend, that a few pundits started to wake up to the fact that we might be challengers this season.
I think the biggest thing for us is I look at our defence, and you see Konate comes in at the weekend, and we look as strong, if not stronger, with him there, right? Yeah, they were able to play Matip and Gomez, got away with it, right, in terms of the result that was there. You can rest Van Dijk, which we never thought we'd do before. We can rest Robertson, I really like Tsimikas. I have to say, I really like him. I think he's
Phil believes he's a real player now.
He wasn't there last year. He went on a massive holiday, round the world trip. He won the Enrique ticket to go around the world to do whatever he wanted for 12 months. Now he's there. The year off, his career break did him well, and he's coming back and he's on fire for us, right? The only question mark you have over, and Milner does really well at the weekend, but you're still worried about what happens at right back if Trent has an enforced absence. But my God, you look at that midfield, and I'm looking at Hendo, Thiago, and Fabinho. The balance is fantastic across it. You know, I know Keita comes on and scores his goal, and fair play to him. But the balance in that midfield was just beautiful to watch at the weekend. It's a really nice balanced midfield. It has everything. It's got the metronome in Thiago with who can pick the balls. You've got Hendo who's pushing the whole team along, and then Fabinho is just a one man wall. I'm as happy as I have been for a while, and whether we win the league or not, I think we're going to go close. It's going to take something to really beat us.
David Glennon asked there, is there any news on Thiago injury? I think it was the calf injury. He's expected to miss two games, which is Norwich and Brentford, and then he's in contention for Porto. A lot of people gave out about, now it all seems to be about depth at the moment, and have we got enough players to be making those signings. But I remember beforehand the argument was about the creativity in midfield, and you're talking about balance there. Say Liverpool's first choice midfield at the moment is Thiago, Henderson, and Fabinho, with Keita knocking on the door, and Elliot when he's fit as well. There's quite a few players that can come in seamlessly. But what Klopp did there in looking at Wijnaldum likely to leave and bringing in Thiago, changing things up a little bit, making the midfield that bit more dynamic. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful now, that midfield, isn't it? It has a little bit of everything. Look at how high up Thiago can win the ball and the transition to create chances. How Thiago picks up the ball deep, sprays balls out to Trent or Robbo or whoever, Salah. It's quality, and Henderson, still working as hard as ever. It's a quality midfield and seriously underrated.
I think Curtis Jones as well. We can hope to see a bit of development from him. I guess unfortunate for Harvey Elliott, but I think that'll open up more opportunity for Curtis Jones.
We've even forgotten for Harvey Elliott, and that's not doing the fella a disrespect, because he was fantastic for us until he got injured. Right? He looked like a player we signed for 24, 25 million quid, and it's gone straight in. Like that City spent 100 million on Grealish, and Elliott was having as big an impact for us, if not bigger, than Grealish has had at City. City signing Grealish was the most stupid signing I've ever seen in my life for the amount of money they spent on him. He didn't make the team any better. He was another one of the same players that they're going to play and do the same things as they're already doing. What's different to Grealish being in
just
that
a
team?
Just a luxury and something, as you say, they didn't particularly need. And I think it was also an element of them feeling like they had to sign him to stop him from going to another one of the rivals,
I'd be honest with you, had Ronaldo gone to City, that would have made a lot more sense than what went and happened. Ronaldo going to United was purely about him not going to City. It wasn't about what he was going to do for United or what he was going to. It was just to stop. And to be honest with you, I'm glad Ronaldo didn't go. If they had had him up front to be there, what was clearly what their plan was to have a Harry Kane type number nine who could score loads of goals with the lads servicing him from it off the wings, that would have been a much more damaging proposition than what they've gone and done. So I'm let them have Grealish. Look, a smashing player, but he's not a difference maker to that City side. I could be proven wrong. I'm sure I'll have this trial back in my face come the end of the season. But at this moment in time, looking at what's there, I just think they're signed the same. Like they have Sterling that did that. They had Mahrez they had one of the Silvers to do it. They had name of player that City signed that plays in off the channels, and it's the same player. Just signed loads of the same players.
I think they could finish fourth.
They could, yeah.
I think they could. I think Chelsea have the advantage of this sort of unknown at the moment. People haven't quite figured out how to play against them, and You know, Lukaku playing centre forward at times is unplayable. You know, they've quality all over the pitch. Teams, it's going to be a while before teams can figure out how to play them. And then look, the media are building Chelsea up. That's fair enough. The media like something new. They want they want a really exciting Premier League. They dream of four teams challenging for the title. You know, they're bored of City and Liverpool going toe to toe for the last few years. they probably wouldn't want Liverpool to run away with it again. And United, I think Ronaldo makes a big difference. He's going to score every bloody game, but they're weak at the back. They've no plans.
It's massive. I think we're being, you know, a little disingenuous there with United. They finished second last year and they're at the adding one of the best strikers around onto their game.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Lifted the whole team.
They finished second with 5 points ahead of Liverpool, who had their worst season and, like, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't take away from the fact they finished second. It's second in the Premier League isn't some shit fucking achievement. I hate them more than anyone else, and I don't mind digging them up in any way. But yeah, let's face it, second. They finished second in the Premier League, it's an achievement. And now they've added to it by bringing in Ronaldo, who's going to score. It's not an achievement.
Challenging for the league and finishing second is an achievement because you went toe to toe with the title winners and you finished on 89 points or 90 points and just missed out. It's a false dawn. It's given all these.
So you're comparing it with how close we were in the year we were runners up, but that doesn't still. It's second.
Absolutely,
the
It's a total different ball game. You know what I mean? They end up in a battle for Champions League. They finished 5 points ahead of Liverpool and toured. You know what I mean? It was a top four battle. It wasn't a championship battle.
I want to start to move along because I think it's worth talking about Ray's topic because it flows into what we're talking about. And that is the City, the cracks in City at the moment. We're talking about two teams. Like, again, how many points did City put on the board last year?
80 something in the end, was it?
Yes. Yeah, so they haven't managed to do a 90-point season since the year they beat us and we won the Champions League that year, right? So they finished with just over the 80-point mark there when they finished runners-up to us in the season, finished in February. And when they all win the league, I think they win on 87 points, right? I think people are underestimating the difficulty it is to put up a 90-point season in any calendar year, right? In any year, to put a 90-point season, most times I think the league has won around 87 to 89 points. And we've had those mad years where City teams or a Chelsea team have done 90 plus, and of course City did 100 points. Like, we've managed to string three seasons of 90 plus points over the last 10 years, and we've only won the league once. Which would have, we should have had three league titles if you actually go by what our point totals would have normally got us. So to think that Chelsea will get 90 points, United potentially get 90 points, that City get 90 points and we don't get 90 points is, I think at best two teams break 90 points.
That can't defend won't get 90 points, and United can't defend. We're absolutely blessed to beat West Ham. Blessed. A penalty in the 90th minute that
they missed. Pops to beat Wolves as well. Or did they beat Wolves or draw with Wolves, but they were pops in that match
They're so weak at the back. De Gea is not half the goalkeeper he was. You know, you're looking at goalkeepers, you know, in the other three teams that are far superior.
What I'm always trying to say about United there, so all that you've just said is perfectly true about United, how pox they were and how shit they were. But the bottom line is it's doing stuff for them. They finished runners up last year and now they're up the top end of the league again at the start. So as much as we want to say they're shy, they won't give a fuck if we're there saying that crap about
this. I don't think they're
up there contending. They're contending for the league. They're in with the top four.
Right, I don't disagree with you, but I think if I'm going to be straight, which is only two teams in this group of four have a history with putting 90 points on the board in the last 10 years. Okay, and that's the truth. Even the years City won the league, I think they got 89 points in terms of what it was. I think if the league is won between 85 and 87 points, United and Chelsea are in with a shout. Okay, I think if the league is won between 85 and 90 points, the likelihood is that it's going to be one of Liverpool or City, just because they have that experience of that relentless winning that you need in the second half of the season to get to that point total.
I don't think United, there's a comment in there about United's average over the last three seasons being 68 points. This is Sten Solly in the comments. I don't recall them breaking 80. I might be wrong, but I don't recall them breaking 80 points in those three seasons. So I don't see where they're going to make that giant leap into the 80s, potentially 90s. They haven't got close to 90 points in years.
I'm not saying they can't, but I'm just saying it's unlikely, right? And I just want to point, I don't, it's not that it's impossible for them to do. And potentially with Ronaldo, you might just, you could be a 13-14 like us, where it wasn't about the defending, it was just about scoring teams and just coming off with mad results. And stuff like that happens, right? Stuff like that happens. John, you're right, Chelsea got 93 points under Conte. I thought it was 89, but like, yeah, again, so Chelsea have, but like that team has been disbanded essentially in terms of what was there under Conte compared to what's there now at the moment. But they do have that history. The only thing is on the Tuchel side, he's been one of those that has cracked, right? I'm not at PSG, he didn't crack, but at Dortmund, he did tend to crack in those really tight title races. So when he was at Dortmund, was expected to challenge Bayern Munich. He couldn't. He cracked in the big games, and he hasn't faced the big games yet. We talk about the big games ourselves against Chelsea. Nothing was riding in that game. It's happened so early in the season. Yeah. It's like the lads talking about the games against City and United coming up in October. I'm glad we're getting them in October. Anything you drop in October, you can make up by Christmas.
It's recoverable. Yeah.
All right. So it's when you get to the far side, it's like the old, I think it's Ferguson once said, he says you can't win a league in September, but you can lose it, right? Mm. So you can, and that's when you look at what's going on, there's really only four teams at this point who have the capabilities. And I say the capabilities to do it, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, moving it on to the City situation, Phil. I mean, it's Chelsea City this weekend, isn't it? I mean, it's a huge, like, you know, a huge three games coming up for them. They've got Chelsea, then they've got PSG in the Champions League, and then they've got ourselves, you know what I mean? So for City, like, this is a fairly significant week, even if it is early in the year, and they're coming off the back of it. You know, I'm talking about City's cracks here. You know, it's, you know, everyone can have one of those days where you have a 0-0. It was a funny game. It was strange, you know, sending off that was overturned, which, by the way, was completely and utterly ridiculous, unprecedented from what I can see in a game for a decision like that to be overturned when it clearly wasn't clear and obvious. It was a strange game. They had a goal at the end which was disallowed, rightly so. They could have stole it, but it wasn't so much the fact that they, you know, struggled against, you know, a sort of a bang average, you know, historically mid-table side. It was just all the other shenanigans that was going on, and Pep kind of, you know, losing his kind of rag a little bit and sending out that signal to the fans that, you know, he's clearly he's discontented with what he sees as a fan base there that's not turning up and getting behind the team. I mean, it is quite hard to understand and believe that a team that's been challenging for the league every year was on the cusp of winning the Champions League last season, after a season and a half of fans not being allowed in stadiums, that they can't sell out. I can see why it would be driving them absolutely like nuts, because it just defies logic, really. So I think, you know, between what we've seen from them in the summer in terms of not going out there and getting the players that they needed to strengthen in the areas that they needed to address, particularly up front. You know, he's relying on Jesus. He'll always score goals every now and then, but he's not that kind of dominant goal scorer. He clearly hasn't had faith in them for a long time. So I just see, you know, to me, the thing that annoys me now is that Chelsea have, you know, really kind of gone up a level under Tuchel, and that they, you know, that they are going to be a real proper threat to us this season. I don't believe United will hold that consistency through the course of the 38 games. I would like someone to work out Chelsea sooner rather than later, because right now they have this kind of air of they're not going to concede, or they might concede one, and they've always got that threat going forward. They just seem to have that right blend to really get through a full season. They're European champions. There's just that little bit of a swagger back about them.
Yeah, and a bit of you'd like steel. That to happen sooner rather than later, just to take the wind out of sails a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, just a bit of steel and determination. So I think this, the City cracks are there for everyone to see. It'll be really interesting this week. Now, they'll probably go ahead and have a blinder of a week, but I think that will paper up the cracks for so long. They'll keep emerging and keep emerging. And,
okay, right. You know, can I just add on, is this, again, hope more than a reality? I know. I think Pep was taken probably aback by the fact that the City fans kicked back about his where he asked them, can they turn up in the stadium and be fans and make the place loud? Like, this seems to. I'm not defending City fans here, but like in reality, they used to have a stadium that held 30 to 35,000 fans. It was always full, right? They now have a stadium that holds 55,000 fans, and you can see about 35,000 fans turn up on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Is it not just that City are what they are, which is a mid-tier club? They aren't, they have no, there's no real attraction to City outside of England, right? So there's no international presence. They don't have a global superstar. They don't have anything that draws international fans out. They've never performed in the big games. They haven't won any European trophies. The only thing they have going for them is that they've won loads of leagues in the last 10 years in England. The only thing they have going for them is that they have Pep Guardiola as their manager. But Pep Guardiola as a manager hasn't won a Champions League title in nearly a decade now at this stage, right? And Pep Guardiola has never built anything from scratch. And he's never built anything where he hasn't had the richest team in the league. And people are cottoned onto the fact that Pep Guardiola, while he plays lovely, expansive football, really delivers what you expect to get out of the money that's been spent on the team that's there, and doesn't bring anything new. He doesn't make that team better than what they are. They would have won what they've won in England had Conte been manager, had Simeone been manager, right? But they've done nothing in Europe. They've got to a Champions League final. That's all they've done. That's literally it in a nutshell. That's what they've done under Pep Guardiola. And he's bottled it. As he bottled it when he was at Bayern Munich in terms of getting the Champions League quarterfinals and getting knocked out in the semifinals. And as he's done everywhere since he hasn't had Messi in the team, who was a true global superstar. So when you say the cracks are shown in City, is it not just a case that the reality is starting to dawn on him? That he's actually, well, he might be at the richest club in terms of monetary value that can be spent in the country he's at. He's not at a big club. He's not at an important club. He's not at a club that has a global presence that he had potentially at Bayern Munich and he had at Barcelona before. And this is actually Pep maybe just greasing that little wheel that allows him that if he doesn't win the Champions League this year, that he has his exit. He has the door is just that little bit cranked open to squeeze out and rebuild Barcelona or rebuild Juventus, right?
Can I counter that a small bit there and just sort of say that, you know, we're saying he didn't do this or he hasn't done that, but the bottom line is they won the league and they made it to a Champions League final. So they were 90 minutes away from having a fucking amazing season. Now, I think Pep has made reference numerous times to what a crowd can do at Anfield. You've seen the interviews where he was on some foreign channel talking about Anfield and what it can do and what it can, and he knows that this is a call to arms for his fans, wondering is this what we need? Do we need?
It's only 25,000 of them, right? There's only 25,000.
He's calling for even the 35,000 to make more noise. He's calling for, he wants an atmosphere like thing. He's wondering, is that the little final piece that could push them over the line with the European stuff? He knows what it is. It could also be even league-wise, knowing that we have that ace back in our sleeve, knowing that we were only half the team without fans behind us last year. You know, and he's asking for help, I think, you know. He's asking for that extra little bit. Like I said, we're making it sound like they were shy. I mean, they won the league and we're in the Champions League final.
You know? Own book makes a great point. Pep Guardiola and Klopp. Does Klopp win the Champions League with that squad that City has?
Oh, yeah, I believe so, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
You've answered my question.
Yeah, no.
Thanks. Take back all your points. Bring them out to the bin. Chuck them in there. Andy, City's cracks. Do you like looking at City's cracks? Because I heard you're a dab hand with drones.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think there's some valid points made. Look, you know, asking for fans to get behind a team, it doesn't work that way. You can't ask for that. You can't dish out like hymn sheets on seats or tell fans to arrive early and crank up the volume. It doesn't work like that. The reason Anfield works so well is because everyone's willing. Everyone's there for the same purpose. Everyone's been doing this for years. And it creates such an atmosphere, and it's real. And every team that comes to Anfield feels it. AC Milan felt it. You don't ask, can you do that? I mean, look, even look at ourselves when, you know, when Klopp was on about the fans heading off early because they need to get off because of traffic or whatever else, or he couldn't really understand how the ground wasn't packed out. But we get that ground packed 5 minutes before the kickoff. And the fans, if things are going all right, you know, and the game's in the balance, fans stay. Liverpool fans come to Anfield and support Liverpool when Liverpool most need them. And it doesn't work like that at plastic clubs like City. They've won loads of leagues, yeah. But I would imagine if I got into the head of, you know, a real City fan, like, you know, that's supporting for decades, I doubt they really, really feel, you know, connected to what's going on at the moment. Okay, they might crave the European Cup. That will be another box ticked. But they can't feel that this is the City that they are so associated to over the years. And I wouldn't feel it if this was Liverpool either. We were taken over by you know, state owners, Arabs or oil rich or whatever. It just wouldn't feel right to me. And, you know, you can have your manager stand up in press conference and ask to rally the troops and do this for the little edge, and that's what he's trying to do, and fair play to him. But in reality, that's not how it works. They're a good team, but I think they've got worse. I think they're on a steady decline. They haven't been able to replace top players like Silva and Aguero. I don't think Grealish was a necessary 100 million sign, and someone like Kane probably was. So, look, they'll probably put egg in my face and go on and win the league. Maybe they will, but I see them on the decline. I see problems there. I think they'll probably benefit from seeing the back of Pep now at this stage and bringing in someone fresh with fresh ideas and getting them playing in a different way. So I'm not as concerned about City this year as I would normally have. It's Chelsea. Chelsea for me.
I am. I'm genuine. Like I look past the, as I said, the immediacy, and I still look at City, and you just know that they could go out and lash out £200 million on Haaland in January, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm just they could easily do it. And if they get Haaland in, you may as well write off every trophy in England again, because the fella is just a freak. He's better than Mbappe. He's better than anything I've seen in I don't know how long. Like if you had Haaland and Salah, you wouldn't even need to watch the games. You just know what's going to happen. Salah's going to score loads of goals, and Haaland's going to score loads of goals. And it doesn't even matter if you let loads of goals in, because the two of those lads will score more goals than everyone else in the world, right? But because they're financially doping whatever they want to do, they're just in a completely different zone to the rest of us. And they can literally go and do whatever they want. So it takes, to me, it's like I want to enjoy what we get up to Christmas, see what happens in January, whether if City saw strength or not, see if we're thereabouts with United and Chelsea, which I think we should be. I don't think we'd be far off. At most, we'll either be slightly ahead of them, or we might be 2 to 3 points behind them. Like there's not going to be that much of a massive discrepancy, I don't believe, between the two teams. But there's no way I'm writing City off. There's just way too much talent in that squad. In the same way, There's way too much talent in their squad to be worried that we're not going to be good this year. There's way too much talent in their squad to be thinking that they're not going to do anything. Would they do anything in Europe? It doesn't make a difference. They get to the semi-finals, Guardiola will play himself at centre midfield, and that's the end of that, right? It's just fucking, you know, he just hasn't got it. But Andy, do you not think, though, that Guardiola would have been better off seeing if you could get Oasis to do a boss night or the Manchester equivalent to get the fans going on the roof? They could have got Liam Gallagher to go up on the truss of the Manchester City Stadium, the Etihad Stadium, and do a song for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't. and get the fans going that way before their big game against Chelsea. Wouldn't that be great? And then they could go over to Noel Gallagher on the other side, because they already hate each other. So they could be on the same.
What would they sing about?
Go let it out. Go let them out. Supernova, the whole lot, just whatever songs they wanted to sing. The City fans would be great, and they could all do their own Liam Gallagher impressions in the stand. Could you imagine like 35,000 going,
yeah. Even the Gallaghers don't like Man City anymore.
they don't tweet about them anymore. Do you notice that?
They know that's not Man City anymore. The best thing that could happen to Man City for Man City fans is them to just go into administration and end up back in Division 2 or something.
They'd love that. Yeah. That would be their best ever.
They'd fill the ground then.
Yeah.
Going to Gillingham.
They still wouldn't win the Champions League. They'd be happier.
But Andy, this is an important subject for you, because like you wanted to talk about Boss Night and LFC tribalism, and I can't wait to see where this goes.
I love it because it's
like the antithesis of the Manchester City fans on one side is this type of Liverpool fan culture, which has erupted since we got our swagger back with our rock and roll manager, who is Jurgen Klopp. Go on.
We've always had our fans that would congregate on away in Europe and before the games and on the streets after games or when we're winning things. Liverpool fans have always been together, but they're just being together in this new way. And I was wondering, when Boss Night started, would it be just a fad? Would it fade away? But it seems to be bigger than ever this season. And you know, I'm finding myself lately at home, you know, late into the night. the night before a game when I'm excited, or when we play the game and we've won or got a good result, watching an awful lot of Jamie Webster and Boss Nights, you know. This comes as a massive, massive shock to Phil. But no, those... Someone saying there, Midnight Talker, 50K at Madrid. It was a joy to be seen. It's the one of my biggest regrets in life is not being at that gig.
That looked
phenomenal.
Ridiculous.
That is just paradise to me as a fan. You know what I mean? You have your life, your family and all that, but your football, that is just heaven. But anyway, look, there was a big absence in all this last season. You know what I mean? We just didn't have the motivation. Football is supposed to be your escape from normal life. But this year, you know, last year without the fans, I found myself trying to escape from football with the over, you know, screening of football and punditry, and it just got so tiresome, you know. But this season, I'm loving it. Klopp forced one or two seasons when the excitement and anticipation was so palpable. You know, the football was great, but the fans make it. And the buzz of those Boss Nights in particular, it's a beautiful reminder of who our true supporters are, and not the Twitter crayon smugglers that crave transfers more than results. Like, these are the fans that come to the games before and after the games, go to the Boss Nights, and you know, the gig at that Liverpool Olympia, to me, looked incredible. Like, and I just love that side of support. I feel breaking his bollocks laughing still. But the chanting in pubs before and after, like, I just relate to it. So what are you laughing at? Let me give it.
Yeah, fucking right. I'd be right. You're bang on, Andy. I'd be right up right in the middle of it.
Yeah. I can just relate to it so much. I think it's such an important part of supporting the Reds. Like, everyone together defines Liverpool. You know, and I know Phil hates it, but it's not, it means it must be something good. So I just want to, you know,
Phil, the vacuum of emotion doesn't like it. It's a sure sign it's a good thing.
Yeah. So I just wanted to see what the rest of you thought, and everyone in the comments. Like, do you love a good fan gathering? You know, whether it's Boss Night or there's a few other guys going around before games, singing in the pubs. and getting the atmosphere going, and you go into the ground, and you know, like to me it's half of football. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? There's the 90 minutes where you enjoy your football and everything else, but the other side of it, supporting them on a week to week, and me up half the night watching bus nights, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Okay, so let me set my style out here before I let Ray Brady start jumping around and bringing out flares, right? And Ray Dicko going into full Scouser there to fucking give us a flavor of a song, right? One, I think the fan zones and what happened in Madrid in the fan zone is arguably one of the best things I've seen to do with football, club football, in the last 20 years, right? Since the fan zones in Euro 98 when they first brought them in, and the ones in Germany in 2006. I think they are just, it was just an incredible outpouring of supportership in a game where there was very little trouble between two sets of fans, and it was just an outpouring in Liverpool. And I think it's amazing. I thought that was absolutely amazing. I think that's a great venue and a great thing to do. I think it's a great way to do it as you come towards the end of a season and you want to get your team, you want to get the crowd roiled up before a match, and if people are gathering who haven't even got tickets want to be there. I think it's a great way of keeping that frenzy around the stadium, right? And I also think that was the biggest buzzkill from last season when there was no fans allowed around things. And I really wish we had just done what Leeds did when we got the league trophy and said, fuck the rules. Just go out, bring it out onto a bus that we were pretending that we're going to have and have all the fans outside the ground and just done it. Fuck it. Like, do you know what I mean? Would have been another couple of thousand cases. Like, nobody seems to care about cases now at this day. So, you know, it drives me mad. However, on the boss nights, and they can't be in the same camp, I hate it. I think it's the most false fucking thing I've ever seen in my life, right? There's a place for it that's in the grounds. There's a place for around the grounds, around the match. When you're bringing lads in to sing Liverpool songs in a venue, God, bin, fucking put it in the bin, right? Like, just go and just, nah, I can't. Wait, why don't I? Ah, no. I cringe. It just makes my skin crawls. It just cringes when I think about everyone going along to sing Liverpool songs. Just do what Andy does. Stick on YouTube in the gaff. Get your mates over if you all want to go do it. And put a big screen up and turn it up full blare. And you can just go around, put a pot in your head, and you can bang a wooden spoon off the pot, and you can feel like that you're doing something important.
I actually haven't been to one of those boss nights. You know, I've seen Jamie Webster
for a reason.
Yeah, but I've seen him.
You're not on a register.
Yeah, listen, I've seen him playing loads of times before games and in different boozers and that, and I think he puts on a great show. I will go to a Boston. I'll go to one in Liverpool. I won't go to one of the Dublin ones probably because I don't really want a load of sweaty dubs all over me. Not that sweaty scousers are any better, but it's... But I'm gonna make sure I get to one of those, and I'm going to bring you flag and I'm going to hang it up.
I do enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. I'm going to lock the door so you can't get back out. Right, Ray Dicko. As boss night for you, you've been a proper scouser. Like, is it for you, or is it just for like all the lads who just roll in to town?
I didn't think it was initially. Like, I wasn't really attracted to going to any of those gigs, but obviously I had the privilege of being in Madrid, and you know, that day was like, just it will live forever really in the memory, you know, for everyone who was there. I think, you know, the atmosphere, the anticipation of the game, the fact that at that stage, you know, most of us, well, all of us except Andy's brother, knew we weren't getting to the game. he had the golden ticket. And there was no getting it from him. So, you know, that day was just, you know, the sun, it was roasting, you know, you had your bags of cans, you know, you had the Anfield rap lads on there who were kind of, you know, getting the crowd G'd up, a few ex-players on stage. And then, you know, Jamie Webster comes on and he's already, you know, got a kind of a half tanked up crowd to really get into it. And I've got the video clips and everything, you know, that I watch every now and again, just to get that buzz and that feeling back of my own clip, my own experience there. And it was just absolutely phenomenal. Now, for me, singing has always been, like, when I first started going to the games, you know, as a teenager, you know, I was going at a stage where we were almost guaranteed to win every game anyway. That's when we were winning the league every season, pretty much. So the singing, but standing on the cop and singing was almost as good as actually going and watching the actual football on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? It was with your mates singing. I'd go to, you know, I'd fairly regularly go to aways. I mean, like, some of the experiences on the trips down to like London and singing for like 3-4 hours, you know, it was just, singing for me is just intertwined. I never thought I'd get into the Boss Knights, and I'm not sure I'll necessarily stick my neck out and go, you know, be in a rush to go to any more gigs, but like, it's just become another aspect of being a Liverpool fan that I think other teams just couldn't, they just couldn't live with it. They just couldn't rival. It's crazy. It's just another strand to being a Liverpool fan. And by the way, just another thing that I observed, it's completely different, really. Like, again, as I was saying, I've been in Liverpool quite a bit recently. I've gone past that ground at random times in the middle of the week when there's been no games. And the amount of people who are at and around that stadium on a non-game day is phenomenal. Like, it's, you know, it's just some attraction now. Obviously, the stadium tours and stuff and so forth, but
that's going to stop now, Ray, with all the working from home being finished and people having to go back to the offices.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
you can't be working from home, and you can't be turning up at Anfield saying, "This is me home. This is me home. This is where I live." Right?
So, I think
Andy there in his fire engine outside Anfield going, "Oh, this is me home. Working from home here." I have my Boss Night CD, and this
I must look for a swap for a year. That'd be good, especially if the guy swapping had a season ticket. If any was watching,
if there's any firemen or bin men or Catholic converters, swappers that want to swap with Andy for a year, he'd be interested. Get him on Craigslist. Craig, he's on Craigslist, not Dundale.
Yeah, right. Come on over, enjoy Dublin for a year. You can go and see the guy.
You can go see the guy and look at Dublin's cracks through Andy's drone.
You can pay 6 and 7 euro for a pint.
Yeah.
You can live in my gaff. Yeah, my gaff's lovely.
Yeah. And Brenda be delighted to help host you for a year. Yeah.
Nice area.
Give us your
gaff out in Formby.
Right, Ray Brady. I don't know if I need to even bother asking you. Do you like Boss Nights? Do you know, right, for the fella who started the Firmino chant off before the Firmino chant even existed and spent 3 years trying to get that song going.
So I was waiting on Dicko to say something there, and then I was just going to bring him up the night we were at the Anfield rap gig, and Dicko and myself and Gav spent 45 minutes outside repeating that song. Blisters on my hand from using the wall as a drum, and Dicko was front and centre getting the sing song going. So I was waiting. I thought he was going to trip himself up. Oh, I don't know if I'm into it or not. I see you lying bastards.
Singing outside of games now is just seems to be as infectious as the singing in the games. You know what I mean?
You've been doing it years, right? Remember you broke your arm singing TT Camera?
I didn't know it was I jumped out the back of a station wagon and singing TT Camera and broke my heel. Yeah, I broke my heel. So yeah, I have physical injuries off the back of singing songs. I love that song, by the way. It was an all-time favorite. TT Camera scoring an 86th minute equalizer at the Dell. And I paid a heavy price for that.
Give us a reminder there. What was the song? What was it? You don't have to sing it now. Just give us the words there. I just need a refresher.
Oh, it wasn't very creative. It was just a really basic song.
The only song Yeah, no, that's the only song ever worth singing ever in the history of ever. I loved the Luis Suarez song, loved the Torres bounce, but Maxi Rodriguez.
Oh, you can never get that going song. In the sanding.
It's the greatest player song of all time. You're never going to get another song as good.
Sandon's not really a singing pub.
Yeah, it's not, Andy.
After the games, there still does be a good sing song. Like the Bobby one is just on
the
repeat.
The park is generally the park.
Exactly, the park. You only have to say the opening line of any song, and the whole Bills are singing it within 3 seconds.
Yeah. No, but you can't get a point though.
Maxi Rodriguez, that's like to take the team tune of Green Sleeves or whatever the hell it was called, fucking the program in the Emmerdale place. Yeah,
fucking Nick Berry.
Yeah, what Nick Berry. Harpy, right?
Harpy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To take that song and turn it into a Maxi Rodriguez song, that's it. You should have just wrapped up singing for all time and songs for all time at that point. And that song should be sang over and over and over and over again. The Luis Suarez song, phenomenal. Torres' song, phenomenal.
But the bounce in the Torres song was ridiculous, wasn't it? I was hot milk going on YouTube, jokes about Boss Night. So you don't do that. The clip of the Liverpool fans being locked in at Old Trafford singing the Torres song is one of the best videos on the web. Liverpool.
I'll go to a Boss Night when they start singing the Mario Balotelli song that was sung for one game ever in the Tottenham match in the first game he played it.
Yeah. Andy's favourite.
Was that Mario Fantastico?
Mario Magnifico.
There was dark days too.
As Ricky the lamppost ran around the pitch just running into things. He'd be a good centre back.
On the music thing, it's not just fans anyway. I just want to briefly say, if you only have to watch the players' reactions and all, they've shown them clips of the players watching their own songs being sung by the fans, and they're, you know, it's massive. It's where it's going. It's all about us, and it's fucking great. Phil's just a negative.
But I think that's I honestly think as a Liverpool fan, I'm extremely biased, but I do think that there is a connection between us and the players. Like no other club, you know, or maybe not no other club, like, you know, in Argentina and
in England,
Brazil, and you in know, England. Another, like in Germany, in you've got that, yeah, in England, absolutely.
Because I think, you know, I think it could definitely be rivaled across the world in terms of the connections that the fans have with clubs.
I take your point, but there's definitely this thing between, even with Klopp, like he senses straight away. I mean, it's probably part of the reason he came to Liverpool, but the players seem to really love the fans, you know what I mean? They really do, it does seem genuine. You know what I mean?
I have to say, Andy, when you talk about that, the one crowd that I think, and like I hate that team, but the one crowd that I always think has a phenomenal support is the Palace fans in Selhurst Park, right? They have an insane bunch of fans, and they never
stop. Yeah.
No.
Mm. And you know, when they come to Anfield, they don't sing the usual, fucking feed the Scousers or anything. You never fucking sign on and all that. They don't really. They look. Make. I could be. Stand corrected, but I don't think they do. I think they're fairly decent traveling supporter. Like I've seen some of the worst come to Anfield, and they've been pretty cool.
I think the difference, the real difference that you make is that we don't tend to sing about the other teams that much, right?
No. Yeah.
Most away fans sing about the other team. Relentlessly, doesn't matter who it is, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when they come to play against us, they just seem to spend their time singing about us. Whereas
because they have an inferiority complex, and Liverpool don't tend to have that against any team, really.
That Ray, and also they're shit at making up their own songs. Like, let's be honest. Well,
the amount
I pulled the United fan up on this now, and I named off about, I'm not exaggerating, I think about 10 or 11 songs that United fans sing that in some way mention Liverpool. And it was going back down the list, but the usual. Oh, Manchester is full of shit. I can't really think of many where there's a song or a verse about United. You know, but they sing Manchester and the cop responds with shit after it. But there's no real songs with a lyric about them. Whereas United, of all these, feed the Scousers. This Gary Neville is a red, he hates Scousers. Still singing about Diego Forlán scoring about, you know, there's about, honestly. About
what about all Manchester is full of shit?
Yeah, but that's what I said. That's one that I've mentioned. But in general, like, it's not done by us, but they've a fucking serious catalogue of stuff mentioned in Liverpool, you know?
So, With that, Ray, that almost takes us to the end of the show. But we've got one topic left, which is Ray's, which who can play the flute the best? No, it's not. It's to get around to squad management, and I think it's relevant because we're playing in the league club, the league cup. This week, and the League Cup.
Now you're such a big fan of domestic cup competitions, Phil, aren't you?
I'm on record.
Fella in Phil, trying to get your little fella registered for tomorrow night.
I have to say, I've chopped my little fella off at this stage.
You've got to tie the knot in the field.
Anyway, right. I'm actually a fan of the League Cup. I like it because you get to see loads of lads that you won't normally see, right? It happens early in the season and it doesn't impact what's going on, and it doesn't have the same level of crass vulgarity of made up historic bollocks that comes along with the FA Cup, where they're still trying to put an importance on it. Everyone knows that the League Cup is a bit of a laugh, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that it's a good chance to get lads who'll never get a look in normally out to get a look in to see if they're any use whatsoever. And if you only have to win a couple of games and go, ooh. Or if you don't, you end up with mad games. Like, do you remember we played Middlesbrough and we had a penalty shootout and it was like 27-26?
49-48 it finished, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Mignolet is still taking kickouts on one of the penalties that he's doing, right?
He didn't, you fucking hear that. Fucking 20 penalties and didn't get a near
that. He scored his penalty though, so that would give him that. But so did your man, who was the 18th choice goalkeeper from Middlesbrough that night, that scored his penalty as well. Yeah. But Ray, I think this comes around to your squad management piece, because it looks, I'll let you take away, but I'm assuming that this looks like that Klopp is actively rotating the squad a lot this season as opposed to previous years.
Yeah, well, basically, my whole thought was on it that so far he seems to be rotating the squad this season. And what I wanted to know was your take on, has last season's injuries and what happened to us played a part in how he's approaching this season? Do you think that he's almost saying, I'm not going to try burn out players? Maybe that was a reason we picked up so many. Is there a conscious decision now that, as much as we all said last year was a total fluke and a freak of the amount of injuries they had, that he is going to, in some way, by rotating, trying to manage that, or, you know, negate the chances of it happening again, or slightly negate the chances of it happening again? Is it a change in tactics from a manager who you would have said pretty much always picked his strongest 11 to the first few games in? Now he looks like he's sort of happy to change around and mess around, even with the back line, which wasn't a thing before. So what are we thinking?
Andrew Young, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I thought he's always kind of done that. I mean, actually, after the first season, when Klopp was giving out a lot about the amount of games being played in England and now winter break and everything else, I think he kind of changed his approach maybe after the first season. But I'm pretty sure he makes a lot of changes, especially this time of year. Last year, anyway, the year we won the title, I think he made a lot of changes midfield. I mean, it's a big call to change our two centre backs. I mean, so far this season, Gomez has played, Matip has played, Virgil, Konate. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Phillips coming in, or, you know, I think that could happen. It's good to have the luxury to be able to change two of the best fullbacks in the world all in one game as well. So, I mean, yeah, Ray, I take that point. To change the backup so much is a new thing. But, I mean, I think he's always kind of rotated in midfield and across the top in early games.
Mm. Ray, Dicko.
No, I think
is this a new club, or is this just a case that he's actually got a squad he trusts?
No, I think he's probably thinking he has to trust, you know, some of these squad players a bit more this season. I think the early indications are that he will trust some of these backups more. So I think really he tended to. I know you'd have, you know, the odd player come in here and there, and then injuries sort of determined that he had to make certain changes, but I think particularly when we won the league, like he did tend to stick to his same kind of, you know, tried and trusted, you know, eight or nine players, and then you might have a couple of interchangeables. But I think this season we will see more. I think someone's put up in the comments earlier on, we've already used, I think, 20 players at this point. And yeah, I think, look, any manager who, you know, who wants to continue, you know, have continued success will only do so by, you know, evolving and changing and trying to learn from any shortcomings that have occurred in prior seasons and so on. So I don't think he'll go mad, but this does seem to be, you know, the Robbo thing. I think it's great that we've got an able deputy there. Like
Milner, he's been unbelievable, Tsimikas, absolutely, yeah. Unbelievable, I think.
Yeah, Tsimikas has been great. I mean, it was a bit of, you know, Milner was a bit of a revelation. I mean, I did, you know, I was concerned when you see both, you know, both fullbacks having to be you know, backups, and then you're playing a new centre back as well, albeit with, you know, the most calm and influence you can beside him. So that was a little bit of cause for concern, because New Palace could be dangerous. But
yeah. Especially, I think Milner at right full up against Zaha. I mean, I think you're being a little bit disingenuous if you're saying that you weren't sort of a little bit worried by that. And yeah, there goes Milner again, just shutting up his critics, you know. For, you know, he's been a fucking unbelievable servant for us, and he didn't look out of place there at all. Age didn't come into it. He looked rock solid there at right full up against one of the better wingers in the league. You know,
how he's going to manage Jota and Firmino is the interesting one for me. I don't think either of them have, you know, I know Bobby's obviously got the injury now and whatnot, but I don't know, but Jota just doesn't seem to have the same level of impact as he had in his early games. And I don't know, his body language isn't quite right with him as well. So be interesting, Ray, how he manages that as the season progresses.
Right, is that not just a case of a classic overplaying situation? The guy has played nonstop for Portugal in the summertime. He's played nonstop for us because he was outside the injury around Christmas time. He comes back and he plays nearly every game right the way in the run-in. He's played all the games for Portugal. He's had very little break. He's come straight back in. He started off the season on fire when he scored in the opening game in terms of what was there. And then there's probably just a natural fall off in form. Every player is going to go through peaks and troughs. Like, do you know what I mean? It's very
few. No doubt that is going to score goals. Honestly, I just don't have any doubt of that at all. I think this might be a little dip for him, but there's some of the chances he missed there at the weekend, to, you know, 9 times out of 10 he buries.
Okay, so
he's getting in there. So
taking Ray's point, I think there's one big piece that's sticking out for me. Midnight Toker said it there, and also Dylan Ross Miley was saying the, and I think it might have been a Becca who was using it, Dylan Ross Miley's team, because they've kept saying is that Klopp got in a German specialist, rest and recovery specialist, in over the summertime, who's advising on what players should be rested and when, which that obviously could have an impact. But I think the reason why he can do that is because, and it's something I said a second ago, I think he trusts the squad. I think he also learned one thing last season, is that if he thinks somebody's 80% ready to go in, the likelihood is that they're 90 or 95% ready to go in. And I think he learned that through both Phillips and Williams across the course of the season. Where he would have held off before, previously, from playing those lads. He had no choice. He put them in, and he found that those lads were doing a better job than the guys that he went out and signed. And I think he probably has a bit, he's saying, okay, whoever's left now, whoever they've kept in that squad, I want to say whoever's left, like he's alluded to the fact that they had the right bid come in for Origi. They would have let him go, but nobody is interested in Origi, which also defeats the purpose when people put these transfer lists together and they want to get 20 million for Origi, yet nobody wants to bid 10 million for him. You might want to go back and do your list again. But you look at this
and say, not do lists.
That's another great one to do. Yeah. Like,
you just don't do lists.
Yeah,
just try and support the team and don't do lists.
True. But but yeah, we could do that as well. But like, I think it's a bit, Ray, that this is for the first time possibly he has in his head, he's got more than 14 players he's prepared to start games with. Right. And in that one, like, he's got Kelleher, trusts Kelleher, right? He has Milner, he has, if you go with a second string back four, let's say. Well, you could have Nico Williams, you could have Tsimikas one side, Nico Williams, you have Joe Gomez, and you could have Konate as your backup. And we haven't even played Nat Phillips.
Good team so far.
Like this, yeah. This is what I'm saying to you. You haven't played these guys. In midfield, then, what, you're looking at Curtis Jones, Keita, and...
Ox.
Ox, right? There's your midfield. And then up top, you've got Minamino, Origi, and one of the kids, maybe Cade Gordon or somebody else to go in there. Like, that's... Yeah. We're talking about our backup 11. Now, I don't expect him to start that full team because I think he trusts these... He needs these players for the league. Like, I genuinely... And that's where it lets some of the younger players that we talked about, Bagazagli, the fella, that him, he's been training with the team. Cade Gordon's been training with the team, as we know. And Milner, I forgot to put Milner in there as well. Milner played the full 90 minutes. I'd say it's unlikely he'd play full 90 minutes against Norwich, having played the full 90 minutes at the weekend.
Yeah,
so
he might. He's done it before now. He might.
He has, but
Milner's a machine.
He'll definitely start as captain, I would say.
Yeah. Well, again, look, as the way I see it, you know, Keita, I don't think plays because of the Thiago injury, and Linder said that he's definitely missing for this game and the next game at the weekend. So that I'd say the midfield of the weekend is probably Henderson, Fabinho, and Keita, and that gives you then an Ox, probably an Ox, Milner, Curtis Jones midfield for this game, which is very close to the midfield that started against Norwich in the league match. And this is a League Cup game.
Makes a lot of sense.
You know, and the back four, I can't see him not playing Gomez. I can't see him not playing. I think he plays Phillips. I think he probably plays Phillips and Gomez together because he needs to get Gomez.
That'd be my shout as well. I reckon you're right. He's definitely going to go with one of the senior centre halves.
And he arguably goes with Williams because Williams has senior football in him, and he probably allows Tsimikas to play this game as well if he wants to bring Robertson back in for the league match at the weekend. Kelleher definitely gets a run out, and then up front. I'd be surprised if one of the... I'd say it'd be Jota, Origi and Minamino that starts up front. I'm going to be straight. I think I wouldn't have an issue. Like that's a strong tree up front. There's goals in that tree.
I'd like to see Minamino do well.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
And I take it Quivine's going to be in goal, is he?
Yeah. But, you know... And then you've got Origi. And then the bench will be... The Becks, the Balazagli's fellas, the Cade Gordons, the all those lads. We put Curtis Jones in midfield, didn't we? We had Milner Jones and Ox, nice. So
Brent would be delighted to hear Ox start, won't he?
absolutely delighted. And the gas thing is, like, you look at, there's a comment from Jono, Gomez and Konate start, in my opinion. We need to get their minutes, not Phillips. And I think that's very silly because before the window closed, we all didn't want Phillips to go because we were saying, well, what happens if we have injuries? Right? Konate's just come off playing 90 minutes at the weekend. You've had Matip and Gomez played 90 minutes during midweek against Milan, and then you had Van Dijk playing the previous, well, it was the international break or whatever fucking game it was. I don't know what game it was. So you're looking ahead to the weekend, and it's Brentford. Are we playing Brentford at the weekend?
Yeah.
Wait to Brentford on Saturday evening.
Yeah. Not straightforward.
No. And I think that's a must win because with City and Chelsea playing against each other, we have to put our 3 points on the board and let everyone else. We worry about everyone because we've got United the following week and then City the following week.
Yeah.
This is where I started asking about, you know, what we're discussing here now is what I was thinking about the game management, so to speak. So is there a fear with him sort of, you know, we've a league game, but I don't want to risk one of my more senior players picking up an injury because of what happened last year. Is it another team with them this year? Do you think that they look back on last year and go, Jesus, look what happened to us last time round, you know?
Well, I think Klopp always learns. I mean, I think that's part of the, you know, humility of him. Like, he's just an unbelievable leader. He's just an unbelievable person. And I think he's well able to admit he has no ego that maybe the approach last season wasn't correct or, you know, in previous seasons. And there's no airs or graces about Klopp. I mean, I think he'd tell you that. That's saying in an interview, he's very open. I mean, he's so open about tactics. He knows he has them players drilled and set up that even if he speaks about what he's going to do, teams are going to find it very difficult.
I think you know the marker as well was set. I don't know about how you feel about, but the Harvey Elliott starting the games the way he did. I mean, you know, I'm sure those people would be shouting on and they said X, Y, or Z online or on social media, but there wasn't too many were nailed on that he was going to be a regular. There was a lot of people thinking he was going back out alone this season. And there he is starting in centre mid for us.
I thought he'd get Curtis Jones minutes. I thought he'd get, like, you know, Jones would probably feature a little bit more, but he'd get the minutes that Jones got. He'd be introduced into the team, but there was injuries or whatever. Mm. But again, look at the trust that Klopp was putting him, and look at the prep work that would have went into getting him to that level ready to look. He was keeping Keita out of the team. He was keeping Henderson out of the team. He was, you know, before the injury, he was going to play every game.
Flew in the face of what people were saying, that Klopp's weak point was having this soft spot for certain players and only playing X, Y, and Z. Well, here they had this young player that was just coming in and pure and utter talent, and Klopp was throwing him into the midfield, our position of where he'd made his name, so to speak. And Klopp was willing to drop these favourites of his to let this kid play. So I think there's definitely been a change or a learning. Something went on anyway. But you can see a slight difference this time round, you know?
Yeah, I think Lallana gets a look in as well, so that's because he's...
surely if there was three envelopes this season, it'd have to be...
Stuart Downing's name still in them.
It would have to be Divock.
Divock's going to be in all of them. Divock's in all of them.
If there's three envelopes, it's their order of hitting these people so that they're never associated with the jersey again. John Glenson. Danny Murphy.
I know you're probably going to wrap this up soon, Phil, but I wanted to get this in before you did. Special shout out to Rafa's boys. The wheels came off, didn't they? Spectacularly.
My Dicko's not happy, or is she?
She's delighted. Absolutely ecstatic.
It's so good. It's just key. It, like, you know, all our
how toxic can that get? Right. Like, I actually hope to go on a 3-game losing streak because, like,
it's going to get so messy. It's going to get so messy. It's going to be great.
Did Danny watch that, right? Do you know what I took away from that? I watched Duncan Ferguson whispering into Rafa's ears. Can you imagine what was being said? Rafa giving it the compact, and Duncan Ferguson.
I know exactly what
loafing the face off someone.
I know exactly what he was saying. He was saying to Rafa, "Can I stick that subs sign up now, please, Scaffer?" Because that's all he does.
Do you know,
Duncan Ferguson was whispering in his ears, "You know, there's a secret tunnel out here, don't you?"
I'd love to hear Rafa's brain. You know what I mean? When all this is going on, I think he's just. He's in there to do a job. It's handy. It's only up
he's
the road.
Don Quixote. His head is reading Don Quixote for the 15th time. Yeah. Just
it's water.
There's a windmill.
I have to say,
the like, to be fair, Everton have managed to win the league for the past 2 Augusts at this rate. They might have a chance to win it.
It's going to be hilarious. Like, he's going to be fucked out of Everton probably before the end of the season, and he'll be back just. Like, talking loads of lovely things about Liverpool and everything.
Yeah.
It was good.
Who do you think will go first, Koeman or Rafa? And is there a chance that Everton could bring Koeman back because they love him so much if he promises to only have a blue Christmas tree from now on?
Yeah, I think Koeman.
When they see Rafa's Christmas tree.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He's got one of the best Christmas trees in the world.
I think Koeman will end up with the Real Madrid on the Christmas tree, and that'll be the end of him, basically.
Yeah.
But no, obviously, I was getting my hair cut, heard some classics in there, but one of the ones that I heard was, there's a few blues, cutting hair in there, and one of the shouts from the other end of the hairdressers was, well, no one's got more points than Everton.
Can I just say, was it about this time last year that made you up story about James Rodriguez being going for sex changes or something was going around?
Oh, it was a bit later in the season, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was about this time.
He's after Qatar now. He's after Qatar. That's where he's after. Yeah. So apparently that's the talk now. That's where he's.
That's remains one of the maddest signs. He just went there for a massive payday.
Would they be trans friendly in Qatar?
I don't think so. I think it'd be the wrong place to go now, to be fair, if you're that way inclined. In terms of what it is. Right, lads, that's been fun. Anything
come
else
on,
with Alan?
Ray, Lennon, Dicko, come on, Europe.
Come on, the Ryder Cup.
Big weekend.
If you want to start talking about the Ryder Cup, Andy, I'm going to start talking about the Bears win over the Bengals yesterday. Ray Dicko wouldn't talk to me being a big Bengals fan. Right? He wouldn't even message me back in our NFL chat. He wouldn't talk to me for about 20 minutes until after the game was finished, in case I started bringing things back up.
Just thinking of boss nights and LA. The Europe Ryder Cup fans have a song and an LA songs.
Is it not Ole Ole Ole?
No, it's LA.
No, Ole Ole Ole.
No,
it's LA.
The Ryder Cup fans have an Ole 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 because they sing the Irish.
That was the old Ireland one.
And then do it again. This is like, from Paris down to Turk, McElroy drives the ball. It's like that.
Come here, I have to ask a question, lads. Are the English lads allowed in the Ryder Cup team anymore? Hopefully not. Yeah. Like, they're not part of Europe.
There's loads of English players.
They're not part of Europe.
They're not part of the EU, but they're still in Europe.
Yeah, no, they're not part of the Europe because they're not joined to anything. They're an island now just off the coast, wandering in the Atlantic. Scotland have got massive oars out and they're trying to row back towards Europe at this stage. The Welsh are confused and the English lads are just sailing. There's the cliff edge, just continuing sailing over the edge. Greg, it's great, Dicko. It's lucky, lovely to have you back in Ireland, back in the land of Europe, right?
In the mansion.
Back safe and sound. Back safe and sound to have you all back. I was worried you're going to get stuck there, not be able to get back out. We're working on an escape plan for Mad Dicko when that day needs to come. We've got full shelves and we've got presents for Christmas and we've got gas that you can afford if you're not a millionaire. And we've also got loads of things. Ireland's great. Can't get a passport though.
JM is being very bold.
Golf isn't a real sport, it's just a hobby. Golf is actually a game.
It's a bit
like the Irish sports, which aren't sports, they're Gaelic games.
It's the most difficult sport on the planet by far.
It's not the most difficult sport on the planet.
It is.
No, it's not.
It's the most skilled. It's psychological. It's war. It's war with yourself. No way. I'm telling you now.
That thing they play where they roll the yolks down the ice yolk, right? The curling yolk. You know where they get the brushes out and they have to go like this to clean it and make it faster. That's way more difficult than golf.
It's not. It's actually not.
It is.
It's synchronized swimming. Golf is
I'm saying that with 12 people under the water holding one person up and they're all swimming in exact sync under the water like as though they're robots. I'd also argue that the
lads in the Paralympics that were playing table tennis with their mouth was a lot more difficult than the lads playing golf on the Ryder Cup team. I have to say that golf is not a difficult sport. There's people going around with false legs and everything playing golf it's not a difficult sport. It's a hobby.
What's wrong with people with false legs?
I'm just saying it's not, you're not saying it's the most difficult sport in the world. It's not. Anyone can play golf.
It is the most difficult. Anyone can play golf because that's it. Golf is welcomes anyone to play golf because of the handicap system.
No. You said it's the most difficult. It's not the most difficult sport in the world. It's not.
At the top level, it is.
Fundamentally, it's not.
Look at all the millions of people in the world that play golf and look at the top level of the sport and how many people are involved.
Hundreds of them.
There's only about 10 people.
There's a pro in every single club.
They're not professional golfers. They're golf professionals. They sell Mars bars and Snickers.
Golf is not the most. That's the stupidest comment I've ever heard in my life.
They're off about four or five.
It's the stupidest comment I've ever heard.
Fellas that are playing professional golf, if they were out playing
John,
in the course,
John Salkeld,
they'd be driving greens and far runs. Absolute
John,
bollocks.
John Salkhead is spot on there. Free climbing is a lot more. Imagine going up the side of a mountain with no rope.
Yeah, it is.
That's so much easier than golf.
No, it's not.
Well, Andy, it's at the top of even boxing, there's only a handful of people that you could say are eligible to win a world title. There's still fucking thousands do it. You know what I mean?
Most difficult sport.
Boxers, you just said there's only a handful could win a major, and golf, likewise, there's only a handful of boxers that become world champions. So
boxing even.
John, you're spot on there. If you're not good at free climbing, then you won't be at it for too long. You'd be dead.
You're not going to what?
Free climbing. You're not going to be at it for too long. You get so far up and you come down with an awful bang. Whereas if you're not good at golf, you'll just walk off the course. Maybe a bit way.
It's the variety of what.
Andy's so serious about this.
Andy's the stupidest comment that I've ever heard in my life.
Golf
is the most difficult sport in the world.
It is.
It's not.
I
think golf is a great game. I think it's a fantastic game for people to go out and play. It's fantastic. It's like tennis, great game. Go out and play. Absolutely, everyone go out and play. It's not a real sport, though.
Tennis is
It was great being back in good old Blighty when we won the US Open. There when we won the Euros. That was great as well.
It's a shame that poor girl can't come back into the country, though, because of Pretty Patel's new immigration laws. Right, anyway, that's been the forum. I've been your host, Phil Casey. That's Andy with the most difficult sport in the world. Isn't 100%. Golf.
It is.
Below me is Ray Brady. Stranger things have happened. Stranger things have been seen. And, of course, we've got Ray Dicko back in the shed, back safe and sound in his green shed.
Just about got let in.
Yes. And that's the best way to end this. So, Gavin, if you're listening, Gavin, end this broadcast now, okay?
No.
Good night. Sports Social Podcast Network.